Hello, and welcome to this month's edition of Sports Nutrition Update. Here is Corey Hawley and this month's presentation of Sports Nutrition Update.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sports Nutrition Update, Volume 15, Number 10. In the last edition of Clinical Review, my topic was PSN Number 35, The Importance and Safety of Protein, Part 1. Consuming optimum amounts of clean, non-damaged, non-denatured protein from animal sources does not increase risk of cancer, premature death, or heart disease. In fact, the opposite is true. But let's be clear, there are two distinct types of protein, namely good and bad. And unfortunately, our society as a whole collective feeds on some of the worst forms of protein known, be they animal or plant. Protein and the amino acids and nitrogen it provides are an essential commodity. Our internal resources needed to utilize and recycle amino acids are limited. This is why we need to consume high-quality, non-damaged protein on a daily basis. Athletes need more protein, and here's why. To compensate for increased nitrogen loss through sweating. For compression hemolysis. To compensate for the increased need for energy, the impact of hard and or heavy training on the immune system, and increased protein synthesis demands caused by progressive resistance training, weight training, and the continuous need to recover after that. Those who train need to recover. Once you recover, you train. That creates a requirement of more protein. Remember, the standards are based on non-moving sedentary people and children, not athletes. And it's the athletes we want to be like or be one ourselves. That's where the health is. On this edition of Clinical Review, I'll conclude my discussion on PSN number 35, The Importance and Safety of Protein, Part 2. We know that protein is essential, so it has to be safe, otherwise our species would have died off long ago. But what happens if we eat the wrong kind of protein or too much? Is it possible to eat too much of a good thing? The prime directive with protein, and this principle applies to all essential nutrients, is to provide the body with optimum quantities sufficient to supply our biological demand. That is the CHI prime directive, supply your biological demand. Excessive quantities of anything, including protein, fats, and carbs, and even water, will always create problems. On the other hand, an inadequate provision of the essential amino acids will result in deficiency, suboptimal performance, and even premature death. Kwashiorkor and marasmus are the two conditions associated with protein deficiency. Both involve severe undernourishment and emaciation, especially in children. Despite irrefutable evidence to the contrary, many people still believe that protein is toxic, hard on the kidneys, or harmful to the body when consumed in quantities greater than 0.8 grams per kilo per day, which for the average Joe or Jane is about 50 to 75 grams a day. But if protein was really that bad, don't you think we'd see more direct evidence, especially if you consider the fact that millions of athletes and bodybuilders across North America have been consuming 2 to 3 times more protein than what governments suggest for decades without any evidence of harm or damage. There is no published evidence that a so-called high protein diet produces negative effects on the kidneys or liver metabolism in healthy, functional athletes. Although, as I have mentioned countless times, consuming heat-damaged, denatured protein without any moisture has a huge downside. Anti-protein groups correlate high protein diets with increased rates of cancer and heart disease, but such correlation fails to differentiate between the source and species of protein, as in wild tissue protein versus domesticated, such as fresh barracuda from the waters of Fiji versus a beefsteak cooked medium well from an animal raised in a North American CAFO. CAFO, C-A-F-O, is an acronym for Concentrated Animal Feeding Operation, otherwise known as a factory farm, where the objective is to place as many animals as possible into as small a space as possible. Everything is geared towards getting them to market weight in the least amount of time on diets dominated by corn, soy, and antibiotics. How protein is prepared, the degree to which it is cooked, and the fat content of the protein are seldom, if ever, itemized in research programs designed to strengthen the argument against consuming animal protein. In addition, the argument against protein does not account for the simultaneous high consumption of processed food in Western countries, including refined sugar, milled flour, and commercial oils. Almost everyone consuming high quantities of refined food eats extremely hazardous forms of overcooked, high-fat animal protein, which dehydrates and acidifies the body, encourages the formation of nitrosamines, and corrupts the GI tract. Hazardous forms of protein include overcooked dry tissue protein, processed soy, canned tuna, fast food burgers, hot dogs, chicken nuggets, luncheon meats, and most sausage. There's a ton more examples that I haven't mentioned, but I'm sure you get the idea. To really put protein to the test, we'd have to eliminate all other foods for at least 6 months, then compare several groups of different ages and backgrounds consuming a variety of different proteins from both plants and animals prepared differently. Some would eat them raw, some would cook them, some would cook them using different cooking methods, and then back all this up with plenty of blood, urine, body composition, and performance assessments, including mental and physical. Anthropological evidence and analysis of both current and past traditional hunting-gathering societies demonstrates no correlation between the consumption of animal protein and increased health risk. Like Dr. Ronald Schmidt, I consider the original diet of our ancestors to be ideal. It consisted solely of fruits, root vegetables, nuts and seeds, and plenty of low-fat wild game. The closest thing we have to that today with a name is a ketogenic paleo diet. Grains, which represent a high percentage of calorie intake today among North Americans, these things were not even consumed prior to the age of agriculture, which anthropologists estimate began approximately 10 to 20,000 years ago. Dr. Peter Lemon of Kent State University and Dr. Vernon Young of MIT have both confirmed through their research how heavy exercise and certain medical conditions such as cancer and AIDS, where muscle wasting is common, increases the demand for protein and antioxidants beyond the RDA, way beyond it. Both training and disease compromise nitrogen balance, causing a protein deficit and an impaired immune response. Of course, every individual is unique, and all the variables pertaining to each case need to be evaluated by a competent health professional. Dr. Barry Sears, author of the best-selling book, The Zone, that was in 1995, advocates a general increase in protein and fat as we age and a decrease in carbs. So we increase our protein and fat and decrease our carbs as we age. That's exactly what Tracy and I are doing. To the letter, he believes that the kidneys actually improve in function on a higher intake of protein once the initial adaptation phase is complete. Dr. Sears also confirms that high-quality protein is not toxic unless consumed in large quantities at one time. Now, this is debatable. A typical serving size of protein for women is about 20 to 25 grams, whereas a typical serving size for men is in the range of 25 to 35 grams. Of course, serving size as a factor is relative to who's doing the consuming. Are we talking a hunter in the bush, a teenage girl with a body weight of 55 kilograms, or an Olympic shot putter who weighs 280 pounds. Obviously, the differences in their stature, weight, you know, athletic engagement, calorie output, all these things are relative, as well as their body type. To be objective, protein does create nitrogenous waste in the form of ammonia, which the body converts into urea for excretion through the kidneys. High levels of ammonia are harmful to cells, and excessive levels of urea can poison the blood and neurons. For those concerned about the possibility of consuming too much protein, Dr. Richard Passwater recommends a blood urea nitrogen or BUN test for measuring urea in the blood. Normal ranges for good health measure between 10 and 14 milligrams per deciliter. Medical doctors also diagnose kidney function and muscle chemistry by measuring the urinary excretion of creatinine, which is a decomposition byproduct of creatine phosphate. Cooked animal protein, especially overcooked dry animal protein, generates an acidic medium when metabolized, forcing the body to compensate with several buffing mechanisms, including the body's stored alkaline mineral reserve, such as calcium, magnesium, zinc, or potassium ions. Skeletal health may or may not be a concern depending upon the overall pH balance of one's diet. For example, it's quite common for people to have a sulfur-rich, acid-dominant diet, even with a low intake of protein. And as a vegetarian, bread, for example, is extremely acidic, as is all flour. Foods high in acid other than concentrated cooked proteins include most grains, beans, nuts, soy, and all junk food. Keep in mind that weightlifters on high-protein diets have the best bone density profiles among all athletes when analyzed through DEXA. Protein is crucial to skeletal function and osteoblast activity. Dietary protein increases the demand for more water and B-complex vitamins, especially vitamin B6, B12, and folic acid. Sufficient water will prevent dehydration. 30 milliliters per kilogram of lean mass is the ideal recommended amount. And additional B6 prevents the formation of xanthorrhenic acid and homocysteine, which are potentially toxic metabolites derived from the amino acids tryptophan and methionine. Anyone using a protein supplement or consuming relatively high amounts of protein is advised to take a complete B-complex vitamin, make shakes in a base of filtered water, and to eat plenty of alkaline foods such as fresh greens, organic vegetables, and fruit. The essential point to remember here is quality. Your protein should come from high-quality sources such as whey protein isolate, wild fish and seafood, grass-fed cattle and sheep, bison, turkey breast, and free-range eggs. The bulk of your diet should stress fresh vegetables, a moderate quantity of fruit, and plenty of clean, filtered water. Many commercial sources of animal protein, including eggs, meat, and pork, are tainted with pesticides, salmonella, E. coli, antibacterial drugs, hormones, excessive saturated fat, and a score of other infectious bacteria, including prions. Prion is an acronym for proteinaceous infectious particle. Prions are thought to be responsible for causing mad cow disease, as well as organophosphates and pesticides. Prions are cell surface proteins that contain no DNA. They are normal constituents of the body, but if they change in shape and become twisted, they become pathogenic and cause disease. Prions are wrongly folded proteins that can trigger other proteins to fold incorrectly, thus causing more disease-causing prions to form as a cascade. Bovine spongiform encephalopathy, or BSE, is a progressive neurological disorder of cattle that can be transmitted to other species, including humans. Enceph means brain, and pathy means abnormality. So BSE causes a sponge-like destruction of the brain. And of course, if you market that and show pictures of that, that really distorts the risk. I think more people die in bathtub accidents in the U.S. than anybody ever has from what is called Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. That's what BSE in humans is called. And I think it killed about a dozen people in Britain when there was that scare and they banned beef importation, exportation, manufacturing industry. And there was quite a controversy going on then, but that's all subsided. Everything seems to be back to normal. And again, there's no one dying left, right, and center of Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease that's been identified specifically from consuming the meat. probably what happened is that they improved from every angle sanitation and hygiene and the living quarter and environments for these animals, which is a good thing. Fish and seafood can also be contaminated with mercury, PCBs, and heavy metals. I mean, I'm not saying that animal protein in all cases is safe. You got to use your head on this stuff. And it's often spoiled at the time of purchase. What I'm talking about here is fish. So unless you live close to the coast or a lake and can fish for yourself or buy it fresh, my advice is don't eat it. Today's seafood is flash frozen right at sea or at the time of processing in fish factories, and then it's shipped frozen to retail outlets worldwide. So I think that's relatively safe. You get the fresh stuff right out of the sea, it's flash frozen, and bang, it's on a plane and in your kitchen the next day or a week later, but it's frozen. We know that freezing things delays the spoilage of the food. You thaw it out correctly in a dark place, and then you eat it right away, and I think that's pretty cool. Cooking methods involving high temperature can denature both animal and plant proteins. Heat ruptures and reforms peptide bonds, creating protein chain cross-linking. This reduces the nutritive value of the altered protein and compromises the rate of digestion. So when it comes to protein, heat is not so hot. It's best to cook animal protein with lower temperatures for longer periods. The bottom line with protein is that everyone needs it. How much, how often, and from what source remains a controversy. Nutrition is not an exact science. Today it seems like a choice, but is it really? Should we rely on faith or reason? Should our food choices be based on emotion and taste or logic? I'm siding with reason and logic, my research and personal experience, and of course science, specifically evolutionary biology, paleontology, and anthropology. Humans are predatory omnivores. Like it or not, that's what we are. And if you don't like that, then you have to take on the entire field of biology. You have to take it on. You have to tell biology in its purest sense that all of their evidence is wishy-washy and it's not true. Humans are designed by nature to eat both plants and animals. That's just a simple observational fact. Our genes were shaped and molded from a hunting-gathering distant past, a diet consisting of clean, fresh, whole, wild food. You see, our genome hasn't changed since that time, in spite of trying to alter and modernize it by living against our inherent natural grain. And there's no pun intended there. Like skunks, bears, raccoons, crows, pigs, squirrels, mice, and rats, humans can consume, digest, and utilize a huge variety of food. Just look at the variety of food consumed by people all over the world. Of the estimated 7.3 billion people who inhabit the earth today, approximately 400 million are vegetarian. That's just over 5%. Omnivores have more food security in stressful times and can survive in the face of monumental change when the environment is less consistent. Yet our unending predilection and demand for convenience and more is destroying our environment and limited planetary resources. In many and perhaps most cases, we raise animals for food inhumanely and strictly for profit. I guarantee that long-term health for those who consume animals as food is not a top priority at board meetings for investors and shareholders. Whatever choices you make regarding your personal diet, whether you eat animals or plants or both, choose micronutrient-dense, living, whole foods. Always focus on food quality first. Well, that's it for this segment of SNU. Thanks for listening. And here's a quote from American actor, game show host, and comedian Drew Carey. I always run in the morning and on an empty stomach, and I'll go through a bottle and a half of water. Then I'll have a protein drink or I'll eat some egg whites.